Okay, my brain now is beginning to spin. Mealy.
Mealy happened.
And what was it?
It was a slaughter. What it was, incidentally, my uncle, the colonel, when they had Captain Callie, when they had his court-martial, my uncle was in charge of security. All my uncle ever said about him was that he was kind of a punk. You know, this is a line unit, which means you got an infantry unit that has maybe 150 guys in it, trolling through the jungle, making all kinds of noise, regularly gets ambushed, little ambushes, and regularly can't, when they fire at somebody, they can't see them, and it's frustrating. You get frustrated. Now, I'm in no way excusing what they did, but that was not the only incident like that in the war. People just get frustrated, and they haven't done anything, and they go in a village, and that's just exactly what happened. They took the village, and they had been in a little ambush and lost a few guys before, and they just put everybody, were checking the hooches, and put the people that were left in a ditch to stay in the ditch while they're going through the village looking for stuff, and somebody starts shooting, and then everybody starts shooting, and all of a sudden everybody's dead.
But Captain Kelly was responsible for that.
Exactly.
He ordered it.
Yes. Shoot them.
And they were helpless down in the ditch.
Kids and women.
Yeah. And of course that was a major story here in the United States.
And should have been.
Right.
Should have been.
And then what happened? He was in prison then.
Yeah.
For I don't know how long.
And I think he's out now.
Right.
You know, and again, I'm not, it could be very frustrating. You know, now, because our mission most of the time was not to kill people. Only when I got shot, that was the only time I was ever fired on first. And that guy that pulls the trigger first has a big advantage. And that was the only time. And that was just a soldier's error.
But you kind of understood what happened there, the mentality of it.
Yeah.
But then you said, that was Mealy, but there were many Mealys, you're saying.
Yeah, many, many, many Mealys, you know, maybe not 126 people in a ditch, maybe four, like the two Mamasons that Captain Lee tried. I mean, just stuff like that you think will go unpunished. Of course, most of the guys that were involved in killing those, nothing at all happened to them. It was Kelly that took the heat. But they lived miserable lives, I'll guarantee you that.
Yes, for what they did. How could they live with themselves?
Yeah, I don't care what kind of, you know, because there's a code of honor in the Army and the Marines and Air Force and everything, that you don't do things like that, you know. You got an enemy, you fight that enemy. In a lot of cases, you know, a little kid runs up and hands you a fish and it blows up and kills two people. You know, you end up victimizing everybody. That's leadership. Again, that's leadership, you know.
But Kelly ordered that, and these men followed the order.
Yeah.
Even so, it still must have bothered them that they were killing these helpless people.
Sure. You know,
they could have gone against his order.
Yeah. And when you do that, it's all kinds of course, in his case, he couldn't have prosecuted anybody. They get up in the tribunal and say, hey, he told us to kill those innocent women and children. I'm not going to do it. You're going to get off that. It's just an individual choice. And like I say, there's a real code of honor there, you know.
You said you had PTSD. Does that still bother you? Are you still bothered by that today?
You know, when they first started talking about PTSD, you know, not soon after the Vietnam War, when they were trying to put a label on, there's an effect, John. There just has to be, you know. Some people are affected by the same thing different, you know. You just are. Like I said, the thing that affected me most was that when I couldn't go up the city, San Antonio, because I had a uniform on. And another thing when I was in Japan. By this time of my wound, I'm feeling real sorry for myself. I come in late one night, and the first sergeant, he said, "You got PT in the morning at 10 o'clock. Well, I just dismissed that in my head. You know, I went, well, they came and got me. And what it was, the PT area was a gymnasium at this Air Force base. And I opened the door, walked in, and there's two of those big tables similar to this. And the quadriplegics are on it, the guys that's lost all their arms and legs. And they're smoking cigarettes, helping each other smoke and laughing and joking. I'm thought, I'm feeling sorry for myself. And these guys are, the enormity of it hit me then. Here's probably 1,000 guys in this, and just, this is one place, you know, all, and then the next morning, I went to breakfast, and the cafeteria was the basement, probably held 300, big areas. And to sit there and eat breakfast was challenging because guys, half of their head gone and everything. And I thought that was the first time I ever had like a anti-war thing. I thought, you know, I bet you if all those senators were sitting here eating breakfast with me, they might think something a little different. You're just a kid trying to get through.
You think any soldiers in battle for a while and depression and all, that they just gave themselves up for fire and actually committed suicide?
You know, there were situations like Quezon where they were surrounded and just bombardment all the time. But I don't know. Well, now, I'll take that back. We had a guy named Strohmeyer. Got out. He was a two-tour vet in our company, and he got out. He went home. He lived in Santa Rosa, California. His brother had spent all his money, and he had a big fight with his dad, and his wife had left him. And so he came back. On the next mission, ironically, he was an assistant team leader. In fact, I have the guy sent. I finally got this real story out of one of the guys that were on the team. He wrote it out. He said, "I don't feel any better writing it out, but you want it, here you have it." Well, they were going down this trail, big wide trail. I mean, they shouldn't have been walking on it in the first, but anyway. And they hear Vietnamese. They hear them, "Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta." So they get off the trail, and a couple of Vietnamese come walking down the trail. Well, you got to make a decision there. Do you want to engage these guys, or do you want to let them go on by and get the hell out of there because you know you're in the... Well, Strohmeyer, the guy that had come back, just jumped up and ran down to the trail and ran into the Vietnamese base. Well, he was shot dead. This guy that wrote the story out had his team, the team leader, Ross, the guy's name was Ross, sent him down there to get the weapon. And when you don't want to have the weapon. You don't want to lose the weapon at all cost. So they ran down there in heavy fire. And he said, Strohmeyer was leaning up against a tree. And he said, "Hell, I thought he was okay. But I grabbed him when he turned, the left side of his face was all gone. He was dead." And he killed himself. I mean, there's no way you run into an NVA base camp. You know, so that was an instant where he just gave it up and killed himself. He was a good guy too. But that happened, you know, again, human nature, you know, people spending all your money, your wife leaving you, you know, you're 19, 20 years old, your wife, it's hard for a young woman or a young man to sit for a year and write letters and all your friends are going out, and those are tough situations. The Army and all the services have put up with that for years.